The Around the NFL podcast is really into coffee and Danishes.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler and Chris Wessling. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Championship Sunday in the books, boys. And it, my goodness, it followed a theme that has taken us through the playoffs. Here's a quick nugget from NFL Media Research. The last time before today that both conference championship games were decided by at least 19 points was the 1978 season, which was a very long time ago, boys. You want another fact? This one, the old Zeuser took out the old calculator. All 10 of the games that have been played in the postseason this year, average margin of victory in the playoffs, 15.7 points. Take out the Green Bay, Dallas, and Pittsburgh, Kansas City games, the only games that had fourth quarters that were there was some juice. There's that number again, 19 points.
I'm to begin with, margin I'm stunned victory. That you did that amount of mathematical work, even with a
right.
calculator. Oh, it's okay.
But it was basic. I added 10 things and then it hit divided by 10.
That's how you do it. I think you might have nailed it.
Where I might have gotten in trouble is when I pulled out those two games, I had to pull out the margin, which was 2 and 3, and then take out 2 from the 10 to make it. Probably botched that. Let's just be honest. But
well, you ballpark.
You get the basic point that we have not been treated to good games, and we weren't today. But, you know, let's be fair. Congratulations to both the Atlanta Falcons, and of course it pains me to say this, but the New England Patriots, who both advanced to Super Bowl 51 in Houston 2 weeks from today with convincing wins. The Falcons laying the wood on the Green Bay Packers and the Patriots easing past the Steelers. So you have your the first time we've ever seen these teams play in the Super Bowl, which, you know, the Patriots are very familiar by now in this game. Mark, we've been working here. This is our seventh season and the third time we'll be traveling to cover the Super Bowl where the Pats are around. First time for the Falcons, Wes, a man of history, since the 1998 season. So that's 19 years ago.
Yeah, I think this is going to be – here's a number that I thought was funny. It doesn't sound like a huge number at first. Tom Brady will be under center in 14% of all Super Bowls in history.
Which is when you it 14% does not sound like a huge number.
But it does.
When you add up
Started
everything that's happened, that is
January
ridiculous.
January of 67.
So Brady is – the one constant in this millennium, it seems like, whether it's the conference title game or making it to the Super Bowl. So we'll see him again. And a lot of the familiar storylines that we've been hearing about all year will now come to the surface with whether it's his attempt to become the first quarterback ever to claim 5 Super Bowl titles. Deflategate finally kind of coming to a close in a way with the Patriots having a chance to win the Super Bowl in the year that Brady was suspended for his – alleged, Wes. I want to make sure you don't get too upset. Role in the deflation of footballs about 7 years ago in another AFC title game.
Well, you know, I've been on this Falcons team all year, but there's nothing that will make me happier in 2 weeks than watching the commissioner hand the Lombardi Trophy to Tom Brady.
Well, we'll see if that happens. but we got some business to take care of here in today's show. What we do every Sunday. This is our final Sunday night show from the podcast studio. We've done what? This is the 20th of the season? Something like that?
That's correct.
We will be in Houston next week. We got a couple more shows here from California. But we have the games to talk about now. And, of course, this podcast is sponsored by Mr. Flame's economics class in The Hague, the Netherlands.
Mr. F.
And, Wes, we have a gift from Mr. F. Do you want to explain to the audience what I'm holding in my left hand right now?
This is a bottle of single malt Scotch whiskey from Oban, which apparently is about the best whiskey you can get, best Scotch. And I had several people reach out on Twitter and say, "Do not dare put that over ice. You might put a few drops of water in it, but you don't want to dilute it.
You don't need it." They said. I mean, it was amazing the response. Obviously, we've got some of the people that listen to the show are well-versed in alcohol and liquor, and they gave they gave Mr. F quite a nod for sending that along.
Classic malts of Scotland, the manufacturer, aged 14 years.
14 years.
Delivered On a commercial break in the second quarter of the game, Mr. F, quite a guy. Here's a little note he sent, too. Happy championship weekend, heroes. You are in the Super Bowl of podcasts.
Oh, that's nice.
This is what I drank on our walk in Scotland. Lift a dram with me after the games. All the best, Mike Flame.
I like the idea of Mr. F getting ripped to the tits walking through the countryside.
Well, I think he is probably much more of a...
slugging straight out of the bottle.
I think he's a sophisticated drinker that probably stops by like at the bottom of a ski hill and has a nice glass of whiskey before continuing his hike.
14 years ago, where were you, Mark?
That'd be 2003. Well, it was not a great period for me, I will say this. I was trapped in a incredibly hot town of Phoenix, Arizona, and not sure what my next move was.
Mm. Wes, you were at the law firm, correct?
I was at the law firm probably on my third or fourth college, playing softball 4 or 5 nights a week and getting all sassed up every night.
Very little has changed.
I was a part-time news reporter covering the swimming and diving championships of Rockland County. Sydney, where were you in 2003?
Oh, about the third, fourth grade.
She's just a kid, folks. She's just a kid. All right, let's start, folks. With the game played at the Georgia Dome, the final NFL game played at the Georgia Dome, and they sent out the building a big winner.
Matt in the gun on the near hash mark. Takes a snap, play fake to Freeman. Ryan wants to throw, Jones the catch.
Look out!
Flag down, midfield, Julio into Green Bay territory. A stiff arm at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown Atlanta. A crossing route to Julio Jones for 73 yards.
That's Wes Durham of WZGC. Julio Jones' 73-yard touchdown in the third quarter served as the knockout punch for the Atlanta Falcons, who piled up nearly 500 yards of total offense. What else is new? In a 44-21 win over the Green Bay Packers. Oh, we got a lockup. Who got it? Oh, a double lock. A
couple of people did.
Oh, no. You know, I was thinking about this. I don't know why I did this, because I definitely felt more strong about the Patriots, who I picked. But I think... we'll get to it. But I wanted to be on the magic carpet ride with Aaron Rodgers and have fun rooting for him.
Sure.
But it was not a good decision. Matt Ryan, brilliant again, throwing for 392 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. Jones finished with 180 on 9 catches, 2 scores. And Wes, the Packers were simply outclassed by Atlanta's attack, which is making a loud case now to be recognized as one of the NFL's all-time best offenses. That's going to be a big talking point for the next 2 weeks. It has to be.
Speaking of talking points, everybody wanted to talk about the Packers heading into this game. They wanted to talk about the Packers for 3 quarters of this game. The story of this game is the same story it's been for 4 months. The Falcons are flirting with juggernaut status on offense, and it's fun to watch a play caller like Kyle Shanahan using a guy like Matt Ryan, who does not get enough credit for his pocket movement and ball placement, which were on point Sunday, and Julio Jones, who not only shows the total package, the run after catch, 73-yard touchdown, breaking tackles, the balletic toe tapper in the end zone for a touchdown, the ass over tea kettle, flip and catch over the middle.
What was that?
Tail over tea kettle.
Okay, go ahead.
The sliding third down conversion on the opening drive to go 8 straight consecutive games with an opening drive touchdown. The way they use all of these elements, and you can see it all working together, it's so hard to stop these guys.
I couldn't agree more. And the Packers, I can understand, Dan, why you would have picked this as a potential hero pick, because the Packers sort of felt like a team of destiny. But I think the Falcons have just been overlooked by a lot of people, frankly. And this game, for the casual fan, was an utter wake-up call to what the Falcons have been, not just in the playoffs, but going back months. And what I loved about this game, and Connor Orr, who wrote up the What We Learned on this, did an excellent job of describing, coming out of halftime, if the Green Bay Packers were going to find their way back into this, they're dangerous enough to think there was enough time for them to come back and even the score, maybe turn the thing around, that right away Atlanta's defense squeezed them with a 3-and-out. And he talked about the look to Dan Quinn, the look on his face, a smile that said, this half's going to be like the last half. The Falcons, after scoring just before halftime, scored 3 more touchdowns in the second half before finishing the game with a meaningless punt. I mean, they are one of these teams that know how to lay a hurt on you and not let go. It was a fascinating game. It was not the boring game that we got later. There were elements where this team is fun to watch.
I was wildly disappointed in this game, to be honest with you. I guess it was a better game from watchability standpoint than the late game. But the fact that the Packers, and it really it is, it's a testament to how good Atlanta really is, and they've now won 8 straight games. There isn't, you know, I wouldn't call this, and I think a lot of people, a lot of football fans are rooting for the Packers in this game because the Packers had the built-in storyline of Aaron Rodgers and the more recognizable roster, and the Falcons a little loose on the charisma. Not a lot of guys on the – this isn't the Dirty Birds of 98. In fact, after the game when I was kind of looking for some good sound bites for what we could use, there was really nothing kind of saucy to me because these guys are kind of lunch pail guys, but their offense isn't lunch pail, Wes. I mean, do you think if they go and finish this thing out with another 30-point-plus effort in the Super Bowl and win this thing, are they going to be talked about in that historic way like the Rams and the Patriots of 2007, that level?
Yeah, here's what I would compare it to. The best offense I may have ever seen is between the 2007 Patriots and the 1998 Vikings. And nobody really puts the 98 Vikings in that discussion because they got knocked off and they didn't finish the job. Well, for that matter, the 2007 Patriots didn't either. But this offense ranks with those, I think. And you're gonna stay in the discussion if you win the Super Bowl.
It's funny because in that 98 season where the Falcons went on and got romped by John Elway's, you know, final game, a Super Bowl win, that so many people wanted it to be Randall Cunningham and the Vikings versus that incredible Broncos offense. And we didn't get it. This is a completely different Falcons team, and you can't get out of here without talking about the way this game started, though. I think Green Bay, it's a frustrating game for Packers fans to look back on and review, because after your first drive, Atlanta zooms down the field, as they always do with their opening touchdown. The Packers miss a field goal that they should not have. It's the first kicker to miss Mason Crosby in the entire playoffs. And then on the next drive, when you are driving again and Aaron Ripkowski gets down to the 11-yard line of the Falcons and fumbles the ball away, it felt to me that the game was over because you have to go punch for punch with the Falcons, and instead Green Bay is giving away possessions.
That was – I thought that was a little bit of a more questionable play than the Fox team put it, because they didn't really make any note of it. But that was a play where the ball was knocked out, and then it was recovered right around the 1 yard line. And I thought the momentum, who had the recovery again? Jalen Collins had the recovery. Looked like he might have rolled in. I thought it was either going to be at the 1 yard line or or it'd be a safety. Instead, it got moved to the 20 with a touchback, and the Falcons went right down the field to make it 17-0, game over. And you're right. I mean, you cannot fall behind that many points to the Falcons because you can't make enough stops to catch up at that point.
I mean, two drives later, they have a 3-and-out, which was just uncharacteristic for what we've seen from Green Bay. And then Aaron Rodgers throws on a long third down pass a pick. And this is what you needed to do to Atlanta for any chance in the Georgia Dome, the final game there, to keep this thing close.
I've been skeptical of the Falcons defense, and I do think that the Packers shot themselves in the foot several times today. But the Falcons deserve credit for putting heat on Aaron Rodgers, for coming up with big game-changing plays. And this team reminds me a lot of the Peyton Manning Colts, with Matt Ryan distributing so well, making smart decisions, being so accurate on offense. And then they count on playing with a big lead, unleashing some pass rush, and then coming up with big plays as you get desperate. And Connor really did touch on that very well in the recap of this game.
He did, and I think when, you know, this stuff happens in games and it goes unnoticed, guys like offensive linemen who don't get a lot of attention, but when TJ Lang was hurt, and they continued to get banged up scenarios with their offensive linemen. I think it was a sack and 7 hits on the quarterback, if I'm not mistaken, that Atlanta finished up with. That was the factor that when we went in to look at this game on Thursday, we thought it's going to be one of these 41-38. We were not expecting one of these defenses to lay a hurt on the quarterback the way they did on Aaron Rodgers.
And it shouldn't be forgotten, and time probably will forget it now because the ride ended before the Super Bowl, but Aaron Rodgers went on a truly special run in the last 2.5 months of the season. And I do want to pull up one bit of audio here because Rodgers is very measured in what he says. He doesn't let anybody in, really. We know the issues with his family and stuff. He's not an easy guy to figure out from our perspective, let alone people close to him. But when people asked about Jordy Nelson playing in this game, which was a wild thing that Jordy Nelson played in this game and had an impact as well, 6 for 67 and a touch, this is how Aaron Rodgers responded.
Man, I'm so proud of Jordy. I mean, it's incredible that he was out there.
Aaron Rodgers getting choked up talking about Jordy Nelson. But you have Jordy Nelson there. You get Devontae Adams, who did not really have a big presence, although did score a touchdown. Randall Cobb made some plays and still wasn't close to enough because the Falcons, you know, after they blew out their divisional round opponent, I said to myself, I can't pick against these guys. I got suckered into the romance of the Aaron Rodgers run. But now I'm thinking again, as well as the Patriots, and we'll talk about them played, how could you pick against the Falcons when they are peaking at this level right now? They're a total team.
Yeah, but the Patriots haven't trailed in a game since week 12.
I know, you're right.
They have, since Brady came back, they have the best record, the best point differential, the best defense. They're a well-balanced team.
Wait, is this it? Unstoppable force, immovable object?
I don't think the Patriots' defense is an immovable object. I think Big Ben actually, we'll get into this later.
Yeah,
Big
we'll
Ben actually passed pretty well today.
Well, I think at least for what has been a rough month for playoff football, if you enjoy close games, if you like kind of blasé blowouts that are kind of over by this late second quarter, then you've had a great time. But with the way it's played out, I mean, I do feel that we've gotten the two best teams right now going up against each other. And in Green Bay, it was
You thought that today, too.
Huh?
We're either in for the best Super Bowl ever in terms of being overdue for a good game, or it's going to be Chargers 49ers.
It easily could be. And Atlanta has the power to maybe do that. I mean, except that they're going up against a coach that no one is better than Bill Belichick when you give him, and not just him, Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels and the rest.
Well, yeah, I think you mentioned McDaniels, and there's so much we can't know about this matchup. But one thing we do know, one thing I'm pretty sure of, these are the two best play callers in the NFL, and Kyle Shanahan and Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, and it makes you think about what happens with Atlanta beyond this year, because Kyle Shanahan, by all accounts, is heading to San Francisco. So I wonder, you know, there's no such thing as needing more urgency when you make it to the Super Bowl. But the Falcons may never be this good again on offense when Shanahan leaves. So you better take advantage of it now. So Julio Jones, that toe thing, obviously not a big deal. 9 for 180 and 2 touchdowns on 12 targets. So everything clicking for the Falcons. And they're fun to watch. They're so
they
fun
are.
To watch.
Hear the details on Julio Jones' toe?
He's got three different foot injuries.
Two
basically.
Torn ligaments in his toe and a mid-foot sprain, according to Jay Glazer. He goes over 180 for the second time in a conference championship game, the only player to ever do that. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday.
I think really he gets 2 weeks now, by the way, to get healthy.
Yeah.
And if this is him with a messed up foot, but I think he once again reminded everyone, and it's a fun debate because there are a lot of talented guys, that he's the best in the league. I think I think he is the best wide receiver in the league during a time when there's a lot of great wide receivers.
Just incredibly dominant when he's on. And there was no way in Green Bay's defense. I mean, I'm sorry, but I tweeted this 5 minutes into the game, and it only became more, I think, severe and real, is that it feels like every late January we're getting these, you know, Fox shots up to the booth of Dom Capers, kind of, you know, bemused, a little bit confused, what's happening down on the field, and it continues to keep this rolling.
You know, though, Wes, I think you made a good point, I think, on Twitter also, Capers is Teflon Dom, I get that, but – this is a special offense, and Dom Capers is the first one. Everyone's getting banged.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers' defense did not play well today by any stretch of the imagination, but stop trying to discredit the Falcons. They do this to everyone. And Julio Jones, if you look at the two offenses I mentioned, the 98 Vikings, 2007 Patriots, what's the common denominator? Randy Moss not only beats you deep, he clears out so much space for guys like Wes Welker or Chris Carter to work with.
Right.
The Falcons are so dominant because Julio Jones clears out that space for Taylor Gabriel and Austin Hooper and Mohamed Sanu. He is such a big factor beyond what he does catching the ball.
No doubt. I still look at Green Bay and say that there's some loyalty with the coaching staff there, that it extends beyond this game against a great offense. It seems to be that Green Bay, you talk about we've been here since 2010, Dan.
Yeah.
That's when that first Super Bowl we were here, you thought the Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers would have another two or three by now potentially, and they have been incredibly frustrating in the playoffs.
Wes and Greg, not on this podcast, I think in the newsroom, they're a little bit of scientist heat, because Greg made a comment, which I kind of agree with, that on some level there is a twinge of disappointment to this Packers run with Aaron Rodgers, because now another year has passed, and with the mighty Aaron Rodgers, they have just the one ring, and now another opportunity gets away from them. What do you think they need? A little postmortem on them before we move on to the second game. What do the Packers need to do to improve and get back to the stage that they haven't been now?
Aaron Rodgers said that they needed to reload, I think was the word, that they probably,
definitely pushed for them to re-sign Jared Cook. Mm-hmm. But when you look at that team, the two differences to me, primary differences, look at Atlanta's backfield versus Green Bay's backfield, which they didn't use at all today. They were a one-dimensional offense. And then if you look at their defense, Julius Peppers is going to be 37 years old. Clay Matthews used to be a defense.
He was invisible this whole
playoff. Used to be a defensive player of the year candidate. Who do they have now who's at that level? Nobody. And their cornerbacks got worked over. Their cornerbacks gave career games to several quarterbacks down the stretch this year.
I don't see the development on defense. It goes back to what we're talking about. I think on offense they find a way to do that because a guy like Aaron Rodgers also makes players around him better, and things happen with Aaron Rodgers on the field that no other quarterback could duplicate. But their defense, I get that they're not going to hold the Falcons to 14 points, but they gave them zero chance to win this game today.
Mark,
zero.
Will you be covering the Falcons Super Bowl week?
Wes will, I believe, is covering the Falcons, and I am covering the Patriots, I believe, for the eighth time in like 9 years.
Wes, my task and my dream is for you to cull something extraordinary out of Matt Ryan at one of these like press gatherings. Something saucy, a Namath-like guarantee, something that really shakes the foundation of the football world, because like, whoa, Matt Ryan said that? Who got that out of him? Chris Wessling nailed it.
That'd be great.
Get right on that after I squeeze blood out of a turnip.
All right. So, as we said, the Packers go home. The Falcons go to their second Super Bowl. And unlike the first one, where it just seemed like a total disaster immediately, and with the Falcons squeezing by that historic Vikings team in the NFC title game and then getting just wiped out by the Broncos, who went back-to-back that year, and Eugene Robinson getting popped for hanging out with ladies of the night right before the game, where he picked up the Man of the Year award. That was an ugly little story.
In Cincinnati, we call that pulling a Stanley Wilson.
Pulling a Stanley Wilson. This Falcons team is going to have a chance, but it's going to be a tough battle because we know who they're facing. But before we get to that team, it's time. And now, a real commercial for a real CBS procedural that millions of people watch every week.
This Monday, the earth will quake. The ground will sink.
If this sinkhole widens, the silo will fall in.
And if the chemicals get into the sinkhole,
a humanitarian disaster.
Not good.
Well, this team of geniuses will have to sink or swim.
I got one last big breath and I'm under, kid.
I'll have you out of there in less than a minute. Trust me. Faster!
New Scorpion.
My favorite line is the not good.
I figured we've been doing this all season now. I haven't started watching it. And that one of my to-do list for the offseason is just sit down and binge watch all three seasons of Scorpion, only on CBS.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
10 p.m., 9 Central time, 10 Eastern, of course. Here's a little synopsis courtesy of Wikipedia if you guys want to jump on board. Maybe we could have some viewing parties together, get some popcorn, get under a blanket together. I don't know. Scorpion is said to be the last line of defense against complex, high-tech threats around the globe. Drawing on a diverse set of skills and experience, the team tackles a variety of problems, many of which are extremely complex. Now, we know that from these commercials. While they are frequently called into service by the Department of Homeland Security, they also accept work from private individuals and organizations. So they could be a shadow group as well.
It's funny because after listening to, 7, 8 of these so-called ads, previews, no sense of any character, no sense of anyone in the show that's sort of a standout individual. It just seems like a hodgepodge of people that are looking for like a chaotic situation to dump themselves into.
One thing that does stand out for me is that Robert Patrick, who's best known as the T-1000 from Terminator 2, he seems to be – he gets banged.
Oh, he's integral.
He's the guy that got killed and they had to regenerate him. And he's the guy in this new commercial that was like, all right, I'm taking one last breath. And they sent him underwater in a grate that was locked for like a minute straight. He seems to get completely banged on the show. Patrick.
Good old Bob Pat.
Yeah, old Bob Pat.
We'll let you take a look at the first couple episodes, if not seasons, and then report into us and see if it's worth for us, you know, if it's worth getting on that couch together.
Catherine McPhee's on the show. Little American Idol. I know, Mark, you're a McPhee fan, aren't you?
I mean, I can pretend to be for the sake of this, but I could not pick her out of a...
I don't want you to be playing a character like Wes does.
Yeah, I'm not.
I want you to be yourself.
I've heard the name. I don't have a bead on her.
Here's where I go with that. Bid McPhee, Hall of Fame second baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, played in the 1880s before they had gloves.
Okay.
Not on the show.
Not on the show. And with that, let's roll into coverage of Game 2 of Sunday.
And I'm in the flanker, right, two receivers left. Brady pulls away, give to Deion Lewis. He tosses it back to Brady on a flea flicker. He had Mitchell open. He throws it, stunt for Hogan to the right. Touchdown, Patriots!
Yes.
Two choices, and he finds Hogan for the second time.
High fives for everybody.
Oh, please.
Sounds like the press box at the Super Bowl.
That's Zolak again, who definitely doesn't do these games with a shirt on. Bob Soucy, Scott Zolak, WBZ. Let's take a trip to the throne of ease. Why don't we, Sid? Tom Brady threw three touchdown passes, two to the immortal Chris Hogan, and the Patriots rolled to their seventh AFC championship in the Brady-Belichick era, a 36-17 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Brady was on target all game. And Hogan, you know, a useful minor player everywhere else in his NFL career, went off for 9 catches for 180 yards and 2 touchdowns. In fact, that is the exact same stat line as Julio Jones. So in the world we now live in, the world that we operate in now as humans in society, Trump's America, Julio Jones equals Chris Hogan.
That's where we are.
I think if I've ever called for a good for you to the Patriots.
Good for you!
Mark.
Yes.
The Steelers lost Le'Veon Bell early in this game, but that is not the story here. The Pats were by far the superior team, and that's why they're going back to the Super Bowl yet again.
100%. We watched what happened with Tom Brady last week, where he was rattled a little bit against Houston, had some turnovers, and the question was, wait, is this a look ahead to what will happen against a much, you know, just an equally good Pittsburgh defense in another way? And I think we all agreed, no, it's not what's going to happen, and it's not what happened at all. The Brady-led Patriots were utterly efficient. I do think losing Le'Veon Bell was obviously massive, but the Steelers came out wanting to throw the ball too. I think that they were never in rhythm, and it's such a taller task than maybe to be perceived to go into New England, which is not a feared venue the way that some of these are, just to go in there and take control of the game. It's so rare, and Pittsburgh was not up to the task on any level. This was I thought this game was as dominating a performance by the winner as the first game.
As unimpressed as I was by New England's performance last week against the Texans, I was equally impressed with how they played in this game. And you're right, Sammy Coates lets that ball go through his hands on the first
play. Right away.
Kobe Hamilton drops a touchdown.
Yep.
Kobe Hamilton, I mean, we've seen this a lot in the playoffs where teams that on paper it looks like we should have a good game, they just don't execute, and then the team has their crap together dominates. And that's what happened, Wes. The Pats played a complete game, and the Steelers made mistakes.
I thought for three quarters Ben passed as well as Tom did, and he was hurt. They were hurt by Lev Bell's injury and Martavis Bryant's suspension because they were never able to get that second receiver while Malcolm Butler was doing a great job on Antonio Brown. Lev Bell's not there for – he's the best receiving back in football with David Johnson right there. But they didn't – you know, those errors by Kobe Hamilton and Sammy Coates and then Jesse James not being able to get over the goal line on that one play. He also had a third down drop where Patrick Chung might have actually pass interfered with him. But I just thought that the Patriots had too much. And then looking at it the other way, never should anyone pick the Steelers to beat the Patriots. Tom Brady is now 22-0 touchdown-to-interception ratio with a passer rating near 130 since Mike Tomlin became the Steelers' head coach. The best numbers he's had against any head coach in the NFL.
Here's Robert Kraft, the Patriots owner, on the riser after the win.
For a number of reasons, all of you in the stadium understand how big this win was. But we have to go to Houston and win one.
I mean, from a factual standpoint alone, he is correct.
Win one more. Is that the new do your job? Just let me know. I don't need the big story.
I mean, it feels bland enough to be their new mantra.
All right, and then old Billy Belichick, speaking of a charisma vacuum, he steps up to the riser next. Let's hear what he had to say about his seventh trip to the Super Bowl with the Patriots. It's got to be pumped.
The players played hard. They played smart. We took care of the ball, played good defense, hold his team to 9 points for 50 minutes. Pretty good.
Electric. All right. So, you know, Tom Brady, what can I say? I said he'd have a slight regression this season.
Well.
That blew it, all right? What do you want from me? Well, how many times do I have to say it that I got it wrong?
It's not an easy day for Dan specifically because I think it's something that you've dealt with week to week from September through January, but then it's also their high achievement.
Year to year.
It's been going on since Y2K.
Tom Brady had 10 incomplete passes. This is from Nathan Jonke of PFF. Three were dropped, two thrown away, one spiked. And I recall just one bad pass. I believe Hogan was the intended guy.
He threw it behind him.
It should have been like a 20-yard gain. But other than that, he was absolutely perfect in this game. And again, Chris Hogan, he plays Julio Jones great in this game. And a little another nugget for you guys. This is from Artie Stapleton. Good boy. Like Artie. Of the record, Hogan had more yards tonight in the AFC title game than he had his entire collegiate career 1 year at Monmouth College in New Jersey, 147. So it just he takes – and we talked about this. We were on this, and we're not geniuses, but we were on the Patriots' inevitable Super Bowl trip this summer because it just all seemed to be really syncing up for them this year. And Hogan, the pickup, we had fun with obviously this guy
right.
was going to come in and immediately become a big-time playmaker for him for the Pats, and he is.
And he
led the league in yards per catch, and he was a superstar today.
And it's the one – I remember writing the post in May when he was a restricted free agent, and they put a deal on the table that the Bills were not going to match. And the nugget coming out of some of the beat reporters was that Belichick, we know he's obsessed with former lacrosse players. That's in there.
But I love those little Belichick nuggets.
Well, he loves lacrosse. Yeah. And secondly, that he found that Chris Hogan's football IQ was a rare find. And it fits that receiver position in New England. It's not easy. And Hogan has not been a week-to-week 100-yard type guy, but he's had a couple big games, had 94 yards against Houston, and blew up today.
Here, and turn your volume down to zero if you're a Bills fan right now, because maybe you forgot about this. But on March 11th of 2016, the Bills declined to match that offer sheet to Chris Hogan. How much it would have cost them to do? $12 million total. You think he would have been a useful part in Buffalo? I'm not saying he would have been this good, but I think they should have held on to him and kept him away from the Pats.
Well, cover your ears, Dan, because I'm about to lavish some heaping praise on Belichick, who gets tons of credit for his strategic mind, but he's the best team builder in the NFL. It's not the best 53, it's the right 53. And he does that better than anyone. When he trades a guy like Jamie Collins, who won't agree to an under market contract, he brings in a guy like Kyle Van Noy, who made a huge play today, and they've been a better defense with Van Noy than with Collins. He picks up Hogan. He signs Deion Lewis off the street. Nobody else wants LeGarrette Blount. He picks up Eric Rowe for pennies on a dollar in a trade. These guys are all playing huge roles. I think if you look at this roster, the guys who are making big plays, nobody is above a third or fourth round pick. Everybody signed off the street for nothing or an afterthought free agent. And that's a testament to his ability to plug guys into the system.
I have my fun, obviously, with the Patriots, but I never questioned Belichick's greatness. And you're right. The fact that late in this game, Nance and Sims are talking about how Logan Ryan was one of the rising stars at cornerback. We already know that they found a gem in Malcolm Butler. And I guess you can be overly critical of the Patriots and just try to have fun with it or try to have too much fun with it and say, oh, well, they have Brady and Belichick, and that's a big part of it. But they have all these pieces that they keep rolling in despite having low first-round picks or none at all.
Well, Brady's the glue. It works because you have not only the greatest quarterback, but the greatest quarterback who takes a pay cut to stay there and sets the tone by holding everyone else to his standard. When a guy like that, I've heard Damashek in the newsroom go off and say, why does Brady get to act like a jerk on the field? Because he's the leader. He's earned that. He's earned that through 17 years of getting in that building first, holding himself to a higher standard than everyone. So when he goes off on you, you're going to take it. He's more invested than you are.
Tough day for Damashek, by the way.
Well, I feel. I mean, I could. You could. He put out a bunch of tweets. You could tell he was not having a great.
Well, he
a great day.
And he spent the week. And this isn't piling on, Dave, but this is just part of the story of this game. You know, building this game up as a big legacy game for both Roethlisberger and Brady. And here's Brady now going to get another Super Bowl. And Big Ben's going to be fine. Big Ben's got two titles. He's going to have every passing record, if he doesn't already have it, in Pittsburgh history. And he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer. But if there was ever any question about where Brady and Roethlisberger rank in the hierarchy of all-time quarterbacks, another reminder that Brady is just on another level.
Yeah, and Big Ben, look what he's going to have next year. Hopefully has Martavis Bryant back. You bring back every other skill position player. Maybe Ladarius Green comes back healthy. The offensive line, which was right there with Dallas's and Oakland's, is the best in the NFL. And then the young defense that got better throughout the course of the season. There's no reason to believe the Steelers aren't going to repeat as AFC Central champs or AFC North.
Well, it's another. This is the same story for them year after year. They go out of the playoffs without Le'Veon Bell in the lineup and without them being at full power. That same thing happened again. I would say that it was a week ago that I was calling Keith Butler potential assistant coach of the year. And here's the problem: their zone defense got eaten alive today. So you
yes,
got to
it did.
Find a way to go and match up with Belichick and make adjustments to get out of a game like this in the future.
All right. You know, there is one more member of the Around the NFL podcast, and his name is Greg Rosenthal. And
I say, is that NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal?
That guy slays me.
Yes, NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal now joins us from Foxborough, Massachusetts. A happy Greg Rosenthal because his little boys are going back to the big dance.
His little boys? How derisive is that? This is my favorite.
I want you to know, by the way, you haven't heard that I've been on my best behavior because the Patriots is, you know, why fight the obvious that this was a Patriots team, Greg, that played close to a complete game as they've done all season. And, you know, they earned everything they got today. How about me?
You are the hero. It's funny. It's like we talked to Malcolm Butler, Chris Hogan, all of these guys that I thought were the stars of the day, but actually it was Dan Hans with his modesty, which really is what I'll remember.
How about this? Listen in on this, Greg. This is Tom Brady, who was asked on the podium after the game, if after some weeks where they didn't quite put it all together, was this more the type of Patriots offense that he expects on a week-to-week basis?
It was a good day. And we're going to the Super Bowl, man. You got to be happy now.
Brady drops the brown word. That's how you know he's in a good mood, Greg.
I mean, he's enjoying it. He said it. There's no guarantee that they'll ever be here again. There's no guarantee you ever get to this spot. You know, your boy Martellus Bennett was definitely soaking in the surroundings, running around the field, dancing with the cheerleaders. I think it's great that we get to spend another couple of weeks with the Bennett brother. I know that's what you're excited about.
I like Martellus. I've actually interviewed him at past Super Bowls. He I believe lives in Hawaii and plays. He plays one of those little guitars called
the ukulele.
Ukulele. So he's going to be a star of Super Bowl week. But otherwise, you know, the Patriots, Greg, more than any other team. Know the drill of Super Bowl week. And now that I think about it, between the Patriots who are – oh, and what is this, Greg? What is this thing, one more time? What is that? Is that your thing?
I don't know. There was, like, reporters even asking players about that slogan. I guess that was some, like, marketing slogan. But
Let's hear from Robert Kraft one more time.
For a number of reasons, all of you in the stadium understand – how big this win was.
Listen up, Greg. This is your army.
I know.
But we have to go to Houston and win one.
Is that your new thing, Greg?
Look, don't try to pin this on me. It was like one more game. I guess that was their slogan all year. One more game. I don't know.
That's almost as lame as blunt force trauma.
All right, so you're in the. Let's go back to the game.
Enjoy the seventh AFC championship.
You should, and I'm really happy for you. I'm really happy for you. But in the locker room, you mentioned it a little bit by touching on Bennett was the only guy really jazzed up. Robert Klemko of Monday Morning Quarterback said that it was a very subdued Patriots locker room. I assume you got down there.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. Half of them are just speaking in cliches. You know, Julian Edelman, like, you know, I asked him about, like, the hurry-up offense for instance that they kind of broke out a little more today to beat the Patriots. And he had the ultimate Patriots saying, which is just like, you know, I'm, you know, Josh McDaniels is the one leading the herd. I'm just part of the cattle.
One more game, man, one more game.
Saying that. And that is the Patriots. They weren't getting too crazy after the game, but it's also well after that celebration on the field. They hold the locker room, they keep the media out, and then by the time the media gets in there, it's kind of, you know, they just want to get out of there and do their business.
What are some other takeaways you had from the game, Greg, being there in person?
You know, I will remember the Scott Zolak being up on the scoreboard with the sign that says, you know, the poorly written sign that said, where is Roger, but didn't have a question mark on it. I mean, the crowd probably went crazier for that than any other moment of the entire crowd. I mean, you guys probably heard that they were still singing the Bon Jovi lyrics during a kickoff. I mean, that was memorable. The crowd was rocking. You know, the Foxborough crowd gets a lot of grief, but when they're up early,
Mitten clappers.
Is this still special to Patriots fans? That, I mean, I am in with you a bit during the game. You sounded like people were there, were acting like it was one of the first playoff victories. They were genuinely into it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you forget maybe, I shouldn't, but the fact that Robert Kraft alluded to it, the fact that this is the first, you know, that the season started with Deflategate, that this is the first Super Bowl trip since he's been suspended and everything, that resonates. Like, the fans were all about that. They just want to F the NFL. I mean, the chants of Roger and everything like that were kind of crazy. And I think that's what makes it a little different. And I think people finally realize you can't count on Tom Brady doing this forever, that you would think this has got to be one of the last, if not the last chance.
I don't know about that.
That's my theory, but that's not going so well.
Brady's just halfway through his career.
Shut up, Wes. but, by the way, Brady said after the game he did not hear the Where is Roger chant. That's what his claim was anyway.
Yeah,
but he did hear the Bon Jovi chant. And I'm just curious, again, you being, you know, the spokesman for that region and you're back in your hometown or home state today, when did you co-opt Bon Jovi? I thought that was a Jersey thing.
Well, he's been friends with Belichick forever.
But co-opting Jovi, though, that's a iconic New Jersey song, I thought.
You know, it's a song that's, let's face it, popular with a lot of middle-aged whites everywhere. I mean,
beloved by middle-aged whites.
The Steelers were using it. I watched their pep rally on Friday. I was at work. They did a pep rally, and that was their theme song and their pep rally. So we got to get some new songs.
Guys, that song literally came out 31 years ago. It's got to be something else out there.
There's nothing about the Belichick Brady Patriots that's living on a prayer.
Well, that's
right.
That's a fair
point.
It really
made no sense. I mean, that was the thing. I think that was the thing that struck me in person. Like, how much of a better plan that they had. You said it, Mark, in terms of the Steelers not, like, adjusting out of that zone defense. But in the end, like, the Patriots were doing a lot of the same things defensively that the Steelers were doing, kind of dropping eight in coverage. It just worked better for them. And when the Steelers, I think, really tried to stop the running game early, and the Patriots just were like, okay, fine. We're not going to even bother to try to run the ball at all. We're just going to play, like, four or five wide and it worked.
Don't you think they do that better than anyone over the last 10 years? If you take away something, they don't bother with, all right, we're going to try to run the ball. It's okay. We'll just shred you with our passing game.
Right, exactly. I think they adjust on the fly. Like, people talk about halftime adjustments. Like, they're making adjustments very quick in that game. I think they saw what the Steelers were doing instead of dropping people out into coverage. And it was like, it was easy pickings. It was too much. I think they were really confusing the Steelers secondary with the route combinations and everything. It was amazing. Like, it just seemed so easy on that for them on third and six, third and seven to find the receiver open.
I don't want to understate, however, Le'Veon Bell's injury and all this. He goes out with a groin injury. I believe it was the first quarter, 6 carries or 20 yards. He tries to come back in for one play and then goes back on it. You see that shot you see when a player tries to go back in, and you see the look on his face that he knows he's done. And sure enough, he had the jacket on the rest of the way. D'Angelo Williams, who's a fine backup and had a little bit of juice in his legs on their first possession or first touchdown drive, but he couldn't do much after that. You have to. There is a bit of a what if with this, and I know the Steelers had a terrible day on defense. A what if of would the Steelers have been able to make a run and put some points on the board if Le'Veon Bell was healthy? And by the way, this is becoming a familiar refrain for Steelers fans. What if we had Lev Bell healthy in our playoff loss?
Yeah, I agree. I think the game was a lot closer in the first half than the score indicated. They were both moving the ball up and down the field. The Patriots were just kind of better in each situation. Like I thought the goal line stand at the end of the first half was massive, and just every little part of that game. But that's kind of the Patriots' MO. They don't like kill you in terms of yardage, but then you look up at the score and it's out of control. They had an interesting game plan where it seemed like they had like 5 guys on the line of scrimmage at all times, only one linebacker behind them, and they were double and triple teaming Antonio Brown. And people say, okay, they did the same thing with Butler and Brown. I mean, they basically had McCourt. They had their best two defensive backs on Brown for most of the night because it was mostly McCourty and Butler. And I remember one sequence when they were trying to score on the goal line, they had 3 guys on Brown. So they were just like begging Kobe Hamilton and one of those other guys to step up, and they couldn't.
A very quiet 7 for 77 for Antonio Brown.
Well, and it becomes very tiresome. It's just because there's so many different media voices and outlets saying it. This week, hearing about Bill Belichick taking away the best player. But he actually did exactly that. He got help with one of the other best player being injured. But when I don't know how much of the Falcons game you got to see, but you know who the Falcons are. And you've now lived through and you've seen a bunch of different Patriots Super Bowl matchups. Where do the Falcons, in the way they stand today after rifling off the Green Bay Packers, where do they stand for you in terms of P-level? With all the Super Bowl matchups you dealt with, this one seems different to me.
And let me, before you answer, let me make it clear what the P level represents. One, your underpants, flawless. Your jeans, no worries at all. You're in a great zone here. You got to use the bathroom. You're going to find a bathroom. All set. 10, your pants are soaked. Your underwear, not redeemable. They got to go in the trash can. You're done. Where you at?
It's pretty high. It's, you know, I haven't had it above 3 all year. I would say it'd be a 7.
Hey, Sid, let's pick up some adult sized diapers.
Best. Go ahead.
Sure. Not sure that's part of my job description, but I'll do what I can.
Okay. Do your best. We're gonna get you some diapers, Greg, for Super Bowl week.
I think we're gonna need it because you know you said rank them. You know, compared to the other Super Bowls, well, it's easily the best offense that they've played since, you know, the first Super Bowl, which the P level wasn't even that high because you just assumed that the Rams were going to run up and down. I mean, this is one of the best offenses since then, and I think it's exactly the type of offense and team that can just go up and down the field on them. I mean, Roethlisberger played pretty well today, and I don't know how they come up with answers for Atlanta. I think it's just coming up, you know, we'll get into it, but it's going to be coming up with a few plays, and it's going to be having a perfect game on offense, which they're capable of doing.
Are we assuming the Patriots are going to be slight favorites in this game?
The desert people say so.
Which shocks me. I don't think of them that way.
Really?
I think the public, by the way, I think that you know, I know we don't get into that, but I suspect they will become less of a favorite as we get closer. But yeah, they opened up as favorites. Oh, that's weird to me. Atlanta team, how can anyone be favorite?
I'm with you, Greg.
Hold on.
With you.
They didn't play a defense today, the Falcons.
Sure.
And Seattle is terrible outside of Seattle. So who have the Falcons been tested by severely? I don't know. I don't think the Patriots have been tested either, but the Patriots have been the best team since Brady came back, so that doesn't surprise me that they'd be favored.
All right. Greg, you going to have a chance to reconnect with any past flames before you get on a plane to come back west?
I got to write, baby. I haven't even started writing up this dandy. No, my flight's in like 9 hours.
All right, well, you get to work. You're a true professional, and you could read Greg's column when it does land at some point in the middle of the night at NFL.com/Rosenthal. Yes, he is NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
I say, is that NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal?
But he's nice enough to always make time for us. Thanks, bud.
Oh, please.
That guy says, unbelievable thing to see.
All right, there you go. So the Patriots and Falcons will square off on February 5th, 2 weeks from tonight. And I think we're all excited for that game. And hashtag blessed to be there to cover. Mark throws his hands up. Not excited.
No, I'm very excited.
What was that?
Saying, of course. I mean, it goes without saying. No, the Falcons, I honestly, I'll say this. I'm kind of like, I think the Packers are like the hot girl in school and like every guy likes her. And I'm like, no, I want something different. And so the Falcons to me were what I wanted, something different, a different type of team. And I think that they make this, they put a little bit of an intriguing stamp on this. I'm done with Aaron Rodgers. Go home.
Okay. There you go. You finally got your wish. It took longer than you thought.
It always takes longer.
But Aaron Rodgers took your precious dirt nap. all right. Before we go, a couple things.
I don't wish him ill.
glad that you got that in.
Well, I don't.
A special thank you to Derek Hackett, who is the public information officer for the city of Minot.
Oh, wow.
He sent us a massive care package, a box filled with shirts, frisbees, koozies, pens, lanyards, Dots Homestyle Pretzels, which is a North Dakota classic, some city literature. And we have our new official mascot of the Around the NFL podcast because Derek sent us Cooter, a beaver that sits right now, is perched right at the nexus of all of our cubicles.
Yeah, and we're going to have to, I mean, unless we're absolute jerks, we would box up a big portion of this and send it on to Connor Orr because without Connor Orr, there is no relationship with this city.
Yeah, of course. The city of Minot is the home of Minot State University, which potentially, or actually not potentially, in reality, in Connor Orr's very unique reality, is the new head coach of the Minot State football team. Go check out our podcast from a couple weeks ago. That doesn't make any sense because it sounds like a fever dream. But thank you, Derek, for that. And with that, gentlemen, we're going to take our Oban scotch. But we're going to make our now annual pilgrimage after the final Sunday night show of the season from the studio. We're going to head over to the Cozy, have a couple drinks, reminisce.
Do they let this in? Do they let this kind of bottle of good stuff in there? Or do we have to?
I don't know. We're going to put it under your jacket.
Okay. Like you've never snuck whiskey into a bar before.
No comment.
That's it. Sid, you're welcome to join. I know you don't like going to the watering holes like we do.
Yeah, I mean, I could hang.
That's why we call our new money. all right. That's it. This is Dan Hansa signing off. Congratulations to the Falcons and the Patriots. Good job, guys. Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and new money behind the glass. Till Tuesday.